This is what renting furniture with Feather looks like. Pieces that fit your style and your space. And cost less than your monthly phone bill. Oh, and did we mention delivery and assembly included? Feather. Start renting at livefeather.com.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. We're here after the shambolic 4-0 defeat to Burnley. Joining me today, we've got Luke, Kim and Dan. As I said, we'll be talking about the game that was played today, as well as doing a little bit of a preview against Albion. As we like to do, we'll wind it right back to an hour before kickoff. To start with, and the team lineup. I mean, was anyone sort of surprised with the lineup? Did we think he'd be a bit more adventurous? I'll go to Dan first. Dan, what did you think when the lineup came out?
No, he's got no adventure in him. He's just, I don't even want to flag him off, but I'm really struggling to defend him at the moment. I'm really struggling. I'm trying to be positive,
and, but I was gonna say, and you're a Nuno defender.
Yeah, he's. I used to think he was some sort of. If you could look base him on a film, he'd be a rom com. At the moment, it's just. I've walked in on my parents having sex, and that was worse today than that.
Have you actually?
I have, yeah. Have you not realised I'm a really dark character.
Is that where it stems from?
Yeah.
It explains a lot. But
what position was I in, Dan?
I don't want to get into it. My mum ain't with us anymore.
Oh, fucking hell, sorry. Oh.
We've moved on from this. I shouldn't have brought it up, but here we are.
Fuck's sake.
I mean, I was going to say, dragging it quietly back to Wolves rather than Dan's parents' love lives. I think the most notable one for me was obviously Moutinho was out via injury. But apart from that, it was just a standard team. And I don't know what, I was a bit deflated, to be honest, because I was hoping we'd have a little bit about us considering we were playing 17th place Burnley, but didn't really seem to kind of want to do anything other than the norm, so to speak. Kim, how did you sort of see it?
I think, as you all say, it was just a bit like the, you know, usual team, no sort of, just do something different. Like, you know, I don't think that Morgan Gibbs-White or Vitinha are going to pull up any trees, but it's beside the point, isn't it? You know, at least try something a bit different. And I don't think that he would ever have done that, and like Dan said, I'm obviously Nuno in all the way, but from the starting lineups all the way through the game, I'll be honest, I was starting to doubt him for the first time, thinking, you know, there's something got to change at some point. So yeah, quite in terms of the lineups, I think just deflating.
It's like what you said there. Who have we got available to do anything different at the moment, personnel-wise?
I think, for me, it's not about anybody coming in to strengthen the squad. I think we're just sort of ambling away towards a mediocre season. The season's done. We're not going to get in Europe. We're not going to go down. So even if... I don't even particularly like Morgan Gibbs-White playing for Wolves because I don't think he's at that level. But why not just give him minutes here and... Well, a start. Why not give Vitinha a start? Why not give... You could start Herver at right centre-back, for example. You know, if they're not going to get the minutes now, then when are they going to get the minutes? So I think that's the biggest disappointment for me. Like, I don't think we're asking any of these youngsters to come in and improve the team. But it's the season's done. It's dead. these are literally just pre-season games now. So this is the ideal time to blood them in and give them that experience, because you don't want to be doing it if you're chasing 6th, 4th, 7th, for example, or if you're fighting relegation. That's when you do want your senior players. So it's just disappointing. And we'll see the same lineup against Albion, barring obviously maybe one or two injuries or players returning. We'll see the same the week after, the same the week after that, the same the week after that. Same old shit. It's the same with the stuff that comes out of his mouth. Same shit, different week.
Yeah, completely. And it, I think sort of the same to you. I mean, I actually quite like Gibbs White. Is he Premier League quality? Probably not. Same with Vitinha. He's on loan. Surely, with half some games left of the season, have the club made up his mind on him? Because if they liked him, they'd obviously be playing him a lot more. But give him some games. Either you give him games to improve him, great, or you make your decision on him. Same with Gibbs White. If we played him for, you know, what we've got, Burnley, West Brom, then Brighton, three, not easy, because obviously it's shown today, then not easy, but more competitive than playing Man U, let's say. Play Gibbs White. You got either he does well, or you put him in the shop window. And, you know, it's frustrating. But look, in Nuno's head, he put out essentially our strongest 11. And you can't really argue with that, apart from it being a little bit boring. We can argue with the performance that our strongest 11 put out, because I wouldn't say quite from the off, but pretty early on, there were like massive, massive issues with that performance. And I think I wrote in my notes sort of, we played with a back five, but we somehow managed to play with the openness of a back four, and that we were getting exposed between the gaps between the defenders, like we had four at the back and we had Cody and Sace playing, you know, in two centre-halves. But, you know, we'll go sort of goal by goal. But what was Bolly doing for that first goal, Luke?
I don't know. I mean, you're looking and you can see that he's actually ducked out the way of the header. So the only explanation is, has Cody given him a call? But I can't see Cody giving him a shout there.
No.
I really can't. So I can't even explain why he's ducked. Only Willie Bonny can explain that. And what makes it even worse is that he'd made a mistake only about 45, 60 seconds previous to that.
Yeah.
So then to do another mistake, which is obviously costly. The first mistake was nearly costly enough. Fair enough. He recovered really well. And then, you know, the balls fell to Chris Wood, and he's turned into prime R9. And he's made Connor Cody look like Darren Peacock, because he's twisted him up. Like, it's embarrassing. That's an England international getting twisted up like that. And he could be leading the back line for England at the Euros. And he's being twisted up by New Zealand international Chris Wood. No disrespect to Chris Wood, because he's a half-decent striker, but come on, he's going to be facing a lot better than that if he's to play at the Euros. And it's not the first time Conor Cody's been twisted up 1v1.
I've said this in the pub. Mbappe against Cody in the summer.
Oh, my God. You know, it's not even worth thinking about that, because that would actually be embarrassing.
Yeah. I mean, to be
honest, surely Cody might not even make the squad.
I mean,
he doesn't really deserve to, does he, based on the...
Theoretically, he shouldn't have made the last two England squads, but he played.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like he's working really hard to have the summer off.
You know what?
At the moment.
It's a horrible one with Cody, because he's such a likeable guy.
Yeah.
And he's so nice. And you almost feel guilty for talking bad of him. But at the end of the day, you've got to be honest, haven't you? And his performance today... And I think over the past 3 or 4 years, 1v1 defending, I think that's why we play him. It's like the security blanket of behind two other defenders. You know, it's to protect Cody's defensive frailties at all cost. That's how it seems to me.
Yeah, and I think you touched
on... It's almost like he's clinging on to his place, I think, in the Wolves team based on his leadership qualities, not on his footballing ability. Because the amount of times this season, not just today, ins and out, and I'm like a Cody fan, so I'm not just, you know, trying to get at him, but he hasn't been good enough. Like, you know, if it was any other player in the team, I think he would have been dropped. But because he's captain Cody, he's only been hauled off once.
Yeah, I think, like, some of the trademark things he used to do in terms of sort of the long, you know, diagonal passes and the balls over the top, he just doesn't seem to do anymore. And I know we don't have Jota anymore, but I cannot, and we've got Traore on the other side. It's not like he doesn't have pace. It's like that the things that made Cody great in his position, even in the Premier League, and it's been a step up, same as, you know, Neves, for example. He just seems to not do the parts of his game where he's exceptionally strong at. And, you know, Luke, you're completely right in terms of him having that protection either side. And I made sort of a note when I was sort of doing this, when I was having a conversation with a friend, and it was about Sace playing at the right side of centre-half. And I said, it just screams that somehow we've not replaced Ryan Bennett. Because he gave him, you know, he is the most security blanket person in the world, I think, Ryan Bennett. And for the second goal, sort of, Semedo was tucked far too inside. And it just seemed like you just need that little bit of leadership from somebody like Cody and Sace just to push everyone along. So you had marked up. Everyone knows Burnley play good old-fashioned 4-4-2. Let's get the ball out to the wingers as best as we can and knocking crosses. And yeah, just again, just like really simple defending where we just sort of fell apart for me.
Going back to Cody, with the point that you mentioned then about him playing balls out wide, that was actually like a trait to our style of play when we used to have a style of play 18 months ago, because we haven't anymore. And it was quite an effective tool. And it seemed like he used to do that. Now, I mean, I may be wrong, but like 5 or 6 times a game, you'd see Cody spraying the ball out wide, maybe even more. I can't even think of Cody doing that 5 or 6 times in the last 3 or 4 months.
No. And that doesn't make that run.
That is very true, Dan. That's a really good point.
You've still got Semedo and Traore who are going to be out wide in a bit of space, you'd like to imagine. And it's not even the right, you could say on the left, because he sprays it both sides. So for me, that's an instruction from Nuno that we're not to play that way anymore.
Can we quickly just jump back to one thing that you just mentioned? And this is what I've been sort of Nuno-ing for the majority of this season. We've got to a point where Foden have done so many things on the cheap now, we've not replaced Ryan Bennett.
Yeah. Am I wrong? Genuinely. No.
This is why I'm putting the finger at Foden a lot of the time, because they are doing things on the cheap and they haven't revamped our defence. They haven't upgraded our defence since we got promoted.
No.
I have Ryan Bennett and Max Kilman in a 4 right now than the defenders that we have in Sace, Cody and Bolly. Well, maybe not Bolly, just I've not had an off day. But Sace and Cody, I'd rather just have old-fashioned centre-backs who are limited, but at least don't make calamitous mistakes every single week.
Well, Burnley play with no-nonsense centre-backs and all right, yeah, them down there, but their defensive record isn't too bad. It's just that they don't score many goals.
I was going to say, of all the criticisms you could point towards Burnley over this season, you know, you wouldn't sort of necessarily aim it at their centre-halves. And, you know, it's something that wasn't really addressed in the summer. We got Marcel in, who's apparently made of, you know, glass. But we could see this in January, but we've had issues. And we can talk until the cows come home about Jimenez's injury, Jota going as well. But we've been linking goals for fun the first half of the season. And the fact that we didn't look to bring anyone in at the backs is worrying. And
you remember when people used to say, "Oh, we have to play 5 at the back to stop leaking goals." Played 5 at the back today, conceded 4. Did we play 5 at the back West Ham away as well when we conceded 4?
Yeah.
Did we play 5 at the back Liverpool away?
No. We played 4. That was something I saw today. But against Burnley, essentially the fourth worst team in the division this season, we played 5 at the back both times. Against Liverpool, probably one of the best teams in the league. We went four at the back and got pummeled, you know, twice. And you go, where's the logic? And, you know, Nuno's apparently seen something different than we are. I don't know what, but based on that. I mean, but the third goal, just a standard corner. I felt just frustrating because it, you know, I wouldn't even necessarily say it was horrendously bad defending. I think William Jose could have done better, but, you know, you could just see we just didn't have the heart. I'm almost going to skip over any analysis of it because we're just going, well, yeah, it was just routine for them. The other incident in the first half that I thought we'd just touch on, do you think Traore was lucky not to have been sent off?
Go on, you pick it.
Well, the letter of the law, he should have went. If Josh Brennan had done that and Adama Traore, I'd be saving that. He didn't get sent off. In today's game, it's soft, but in today's game,
it saved it, the fact that he didn't go down. A lot of players would have gone down, wouldn't they? Even though it was just a little shove. I think he is quite lucky in today's game.
It's frustrating because it is soft, but I think Kim's spot on because was it Jack Cork? Because he didn't go down. That's probably saved Traore. I think, was it Martial and Lamella at the big earlier on in the season? Lamella goes down like a sack of shit, gets him sent off. But this is, it's just annoying, isn't it? Because it just winds me up. I don't even know what to say. It just winds me up.
I was going
to
say,
sent off. But then at the same time, football's that fucked now and it's shit. It should have been a penalty anyway because it was a blatant push on Daniel Podence. Now, in a footballing term, I don't actually believe it's a penalty. And I don't want to see those sort of penalties given. But when you see some of the penalties that they've given this season, then, yeah, it was a penalty. So why don't we talk about that instant? And then it doesn't even lead to Traore pushing him in the face, does it, if people are doing the fucking jobs correctly?
Yeah.
Sorry, that's just me ranting about football. I just hate football at the minute. Pissing me off.
I wonder if a positive that Adama didn't get sent off because that would have given flipping Nuno and the
something to think
the
about.
Happy clap as an excuse to pipe over the cracks of that performance today.
Yeah. I mean, like, in a way, like,
it wasn't even like, talk about the formations, though, can't we? Till the cows come home. But essentially, it doesn't matter what formation we played, they didn't have the heart, they weren't winning any second balls. Passing, it wasn't just defend it, like, literally we couldn't pass from A to B in that first half. Like, all, like, the front line, Podence, Willian and Traore were absolutely atrocious. So I think we know you can see that the defence is awful, but I think it was just the whole team, they just didn't have the fight, the desire. They just every time there was a ball that was there to be won, shied out of it, and Burnley made Burnley look like freaking Barcelona.
I was going to say, Luke, you were saying sort of just before we started recording about that, weren't you? In terms of sort of the amount of distance that Burnley...
Yeah, made. I mean, Burnley covered 6K more than us in the game today. Now, I said it on the Insta Live, and I might well be wrong, but I'm pretty certain, especially in our first season in the Premier League, we was quite known for our running and our work, right, and how much distance we would cover over 90 minutes. And to be outrun by 6K, like, you did the maths, it's 600 metres.
600 metres per outfield
player. Which is, that's a fair distance, that is. You can't be being beaten by 600 metres man for man in a game of football when you're at home and you're playing four from bottom. It's embarrassing.
Like, that's what, essentially six lengths of the pitch. So that's three up and downs a pitch in my head. And that is a lot for other people to cover, especially when, sounds stupid, they had the ball more. Well, no, it didn't, actually.
Oh, really?
But we should have been chasing their shadows, and clearly we weren't even doing that. And, you know, half-time comes along and it's 3-0 and no change happens at half-time. I don't know, honestly, what change you'd make. And, you know, it was much of a muchness for most of the second half. I mean, I can't really remember that many chances we had. I know Neves had a free kick. I think it was in the first half, but Pope was barely tested.
I think when you're 3-0 down at home to a team that's four from bottom, you want to see a bit of fight in the second half. You're not going to win the game because we're not good enough to win a game from 3-0 down. We're not even good enough to salvage a draw from 2-0 down at the minute, in my opinion. But you want to see a bit of fight. You want to put them on the back foot. And, you know, you want to leave. Well, you can't even leave the ground and say it no more. But you know what I mean? Final whistle goes. You're like, you know what? At least in the second half, we had some chances. And on another day, we probably could have had two ourselves. Nick Pope didn't even make a save in the second half.
No.
And that is inexcusable. And I don't care. You can be Nuno in. You can be the biggest Wolves fan in the world. You cannot look me in the eyes and say that is acceptable, because it's not. It's disgusting. And do you know what? The only saving up, COVID has saved a lot of these players' bacon this season. Because imagine the fury from the fans at the full-time whistle after today.
1,000%. And
half-time, they would have been saving.
Yep.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
A lot of that team today looked like they had flipping long COVID. They meant they run.
But how can you be, like, it just shows the desire's not there from the team. Can anybody think of a period of play where we strung 6, 7 or 8 passes together? That's so over 90 minutes. You're a Premier League team and you can't have a phase of play where you string 7 or 8 passes, even if it's between the back fucking three. But they can't do it. Was there a period of play where there was like a sustained period of 10 minutes where we really stuck it on Burnley and we was camped in their half? No. Was there a period of play where, you know, we had a succession of corners and we was really pulling it on them and Nick Pope had to make a couple of saves or make some, you know, climb across and then just lie on the floor for 10 seconds to soak up a bit of pressure? No. Was there a period of play where somebody put in a really hard challenge on a Burnley player to try and G the team up? No. The tackles, then Donker, that one tackle in the middle that led to Patricio making that really good save low down. Embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably dig out 6, 7 players, I reckon, from that lineup. Probably even more, to be honest. So I think the only one I was going to sort of really sort of make notice of was Donk, because he, the last couple of months especially, just seems to have lost any level of aggression from his game. And today was, I can't remember him putting in that poor performance for us. And he is someone who is usually pretty dependable. But today, he just gave nothing in that midfield. And it's so disappointing. Especially, it doesn't help. We have no other options because Moutinho is out injured. So unless Moutinho is fit in 8 days' time, we know what the centre midfield is going to be.
You've had two midfielders who are going to be representing their countries at the European Championships in 48 days' time, give or take a couple of days, who have just been dominated by Jack Cork and Josh Brownhill. With all due respect, nah. Nah. I ain't having that. Shit.
So in the England squad safeguard, Brownhill and Cork.
As I say, did anyone come out with a modicum of credit from that game for you, Kim?
So, if I had to pick out one player who did okay, you'd probably say Aitnori. Thought he did all right, but I don't think you could say anyone was of a 5 out of 10. You know, Patricio, I saw some people sort of calling him out a little bit.
Yeah. How about you, Dan? I mean, again, like, yeah, I think, probably, to be fair, between us, we're probably the most sort of positive people in the podcast usually. And I'm scratching my head in terms of, let's say, Aitnori's probably was probably our best player. And that was from him he wasn't our best player. He just wasn't the worst. He was the least worst, in my opinion. Dan, how about you?
I just sort of repeat what Kim said, really. I think Aitnori did okay, but I wouldn't have given any of them more than a 3 out of 10, to be honest. I thought they were just bang average. Or I thought they were a disgrace to their profession today, some of those players. Neves coming back from... Was he isolating or did he have COVID?
I want to say isolating.
Because, I mean, just the energy levels in that midfield was just not good enough for me. Absolutely yeah. terrible. I'm not happy with the performance, but are they on the beach? Do they not care? I don't know where we are with that team today, whether they are on the beach or whether they've stopped playing for the manager. I don't know which one it is.
I was going to say, Nuno said after the game it wasn't a mentality issue. I mean, I don't know what it was if it wasn't a mentality issue, because if it's not a mentality issue, then it's a coaching issue, in my opinion.
Fair.
That seems fair enough. I mean, if either Nuno needs to come out and sort of take accountability for that performance in terms of what they've done on the training ground in the last week to get that performance, which actually I'd have a lot of respect for him to say, we our game plan just completely failed there and we will do better next week. I'd take that from him. But to say, oh, well, it's not, you know, it's not a mentality issue. Well, what was it then?
Yeah. I think personally, sorry to put in there, Kim. I think the issue we've got is that it's a mixture of multiple things. I think it's tactical and the fact that the players haven't got the heart, or they haven't got the desire or the will to want to finish higher up in the league. And I think if it was just one of several issues, you can sort of get away with it, can't you, every now and then, or over the course of a season, you might be able to get away with it. But when it's multiple issues, you can't, and then you get found out. And days like today, we got found out. The players don't want to know. I don't think Nuno's tactics are right. I've said it for a long, long time. I've said it after various matches this season. The amount of times I've watched us this season, and after an hour, 70 minutes, you're just looking at the telly and you're thinking, what's our shape here? Sometimes you're even scratching your head thinking, what formation are we playing? And you can't get away with it at this level.
I really don't want to base this podcast with negativity.
No.
Have the players reached a level of stagnation under Nuno where, or even as fans, we're sick of what Nuno comes out with a lot of the time. They have to hear this blog 7 days a week.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, which we're going to come and talk about right after the break, where we're going to talk about Nuno, his bank of goodwill, and preview the Albion game. We'll be right back after this.
Answer me this. How long have you had that mattress? Because it's looking even lumpier than my lockdown love handles. And while those might be more cuddly, a lumpy mattress is doing nothing for your comfort levels or your sleep. So whatever body you're rocking, put it on a Nectar mattress. Prices start at just $499, and you get $399 in accessories thrown in. That includes a Nectar mattress, mattress protector, cooling pillows and sheet set, a 365-night home trial, and a forever warranty. Go to NectarSleep.com and get hugged.
Hi, Richard here. Before you go back to hearing us dissect the latest Wolves news, some really shoehorn Simpsons references, a bit of 90s film action, and of course, a bit of wrestling, I just want to do a quick shout out for our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. Now, they've done a fantastic job on the Wolves Fancast website, wolvesfancast.com. Please go check it out. But they're not just web designers, they're a creative agency that cover all your design needs, from websites, brochures and signage to marketing, logo design and branding. There's basically nothing they can't do marketing-wise, so make sure you check them out at pixelyetimedia.com, and I'll let you get back to enjoying the show. Welcome back. So, as we said before the break, look, we've got a handful of games left of the season. It has been a thoroughly underwhelming campaign so far. We ran a poll on Twitter, as I say, earlier this afternoon, in terms of not quite Nuno in, Nuno out, but, you know, if we get to the summer, where are we sort of standing in terms of if we're a Wolves board? Interesting at the moment, it's about 51% sort of stick with Nuno, 28% out, and 20% not sure. So it's a bit of a divided fan base, it feels like, at the moment. And I don't think any Wolves fan is underappreciative for the work that Nuno's done for the club. Promotion to top seven finishes and a semi-final in the FA Cup. But, you know, how much goodwill has he got left in terms of AV from fans and also from the players? As sort of you were noting on, because, you know, there's sort of a fairly kind of big, I guess, sports psychology side of it in terms of this core group of players have had him as their manager for four seasons now. And but it seems to not quite be working anymore.
I think he's in his overdraft now. And all that he banked and saved over the last three, 4 years, I think he's spent it. For me,
the terminology that is, Luke. He's fully deep in his overdraft, yeah. And the bank are calling him,
getting red letters and everything. But I think sometimes with managers, you can get to a point where you can overstay your welcome. So I reference Arsene Wenger at Arsenal, the stuff he'd done for that club, legend, greatest manager they've ever had.
Will ever have.
Yeah, will ever have. But you look at the negativity that clouds his name because he probably stayed there maybe two or three seasons too long. Then you look at Alex Ferguson. He knew Man United was on the decline and he got out at the right time. And his name will forever be a positive in the minds of Man United fans. You can probably name hundreds of managers over the years up and down the country where this applies. Now, my concern is, Nuno is going to overstay his welcome because as fantastic as he's been an absolutely fantastic manager. Nobody can say that he hasn't. But if he carries on in this vein of form, he's going to get to a point where the fans are going to start to dislike him. And when we look back on his legacy, there'll be that cloud of negativity. But if we was to make a decision and get rid of him now, I think it completely eliminates that. And when we look back on Nuno, it's fully positive. All right, there might be one or two negatives, but on the whole, when you look back, it will always be positive memories. And so my concern is that that will get ruined because I think it's starting to creep in there. And we could end up with Wenger syndrome.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Dan, you've been a sort of a big proponent, and to be fair, I am to a degree in terms of giving him this one last, I guess, chance in the summer transfer window. And it's more or less about him and more about Fosun and the recruitment in the summer. Do you think that's sort of still the case, or do you think even if we get in five or six first-team players who are going to improve that starting lineup, is he going to be the man to take us forward?
I think he's earned the chance to have this actual pre-season to actually try and transition to a new way of playing, which last summer he didn't get. Remember, yeah, I think we only had like 11 days pre-season, yeah, with a limited squad because Arfman was at the Nations League. As Luke said, he's deep into his overdraft. I'll lend him a tenner if he's really struggling. But he's earned the chance. For me, he's got pre-season, hopefully a summer of recruitment where Fosun back in. And he needs to do something by sort of September, October. We need to look promising at least. It comes to September, October. Not necessarily points-wise. We need to look just a bit more entertaining. I think, like we mentioned earlier about stagnation. As players playing in this system, you can buy into the way he sets us up when we were getting these, like, you know, tactical masterclasses against like Man City, and we've managed to like get into Europe. You can buy into it, but when you're still playing this way of football and it's negative and cautious and just always relying on the opposite team just to tire and win it late, even as professional footballers, you don't want to be playing that way. It's frustrating because of how successful we've been in such a short space of time. But for me, he needs to do something this pre-season, otherwise. But Fosun needs to back him. If Fosun don't back him in the summer, he needs to walk for me. He needs to walk to have any sort of credibility himself.
I was just about to say, and Dan's nailed it there, it's not just Nuno that we need to question at this moment in time and in the summer. It's Fosun as well. And they've got a lot of questions to answer this upcoming transfer window.
apparently Jeff Shea stormed out at the end of the game, one of the first out of the director's box. It's on him this summer. There's no point flipping throwing your toys out of the pram. And for the last like two or three, well, five or six transfer windows, you've backed just pathetically in the transfer windows.
No, 1,000%. You only me disagreeing with that. I think, but the record shows it, to be honest. And for all Nuno says about having a small squad, I think is bull at this point. And I think it's one of them. Kim, are you sort of in agreement that Nuno's very much deep in his goodwill overdraft? But is it a student interest-free overdraft? So can he get out of it relatively okay for him?
I think it's becoming not interest-free, isn't it now?
So he's gone from the undergrad account to the, I guess, the Young Savers.
Yeah, definitely. I think
you can very clearly see I've worked in a bank before, can't you? Sorry, carry on. I'm just completely cutting over your point with really bad jokes. I'm going to be quiet now.
I just think we need to get back to what we're good at, and for so long now, it's like we don't have the players, though, now to play the way we used to play and get the good results against United, City, you know, with Jimenez and Jota on the break, you know, quick with speed. It's just, I don't feel like we're ever going to get back to that until we get backed by Fosun. And I think we can talk about Nuno all we like, but I'd just like to know who's actually making the decisions, because last season we wasted so much money on players for the future. You know, how much of that 40 million of our transfer budget on Fabio Silva, and that's not his fault, but surely, you know, Nuno has to have some sort of say, but what I don't know is how much of a say he's having. And I think he needs to literally say, these are the players that I want next season. Get those players in. And then if it's still going tits up after 10, 15 games, then I think we really might need to sort of look elsewhere. But then again, is 15 games too long? Because next season, we've got to at least be in the top 10, at least. And at least start playing some attractive football or entertaining football. Well, even if it is on the counter, you can still be entertaining, can't you? You know, but we've just got no style of play and nothing. And I don't see how some people can still, you know, not criticise the team, because I'm seeing that on Twitter still. I'm still seeing, give Nuno a chance, fair enough, but there's no sort of criticism at all. You know, I don't know what land they live in.
Yeah, I do find it worrying. The
Stockholm syndrome, ain't it?
Yeah, and it's going to be sad in a way, because I'd love him to turn it around. But believe me, I would. But there also has to be some level of realism into where Wolves are as a club, where he is as a manager, where these players are at, and if these players have reached their ceiling under Nuno as a manager, how much, you know, increase we can get into this team. But, you know, that's kind of looking, I guess, a couple of months down the line. But as of time of recording, in 8 days' time, we are playing the old enemy. We have got West Brom on bank holiday Monday. We won't do sort of a huge deep dive preview on this, because we'll have our fantastic Fancast pre-match preview to cover it in bulk. But briefly, we're just going to sort of do what needs to change. Apart from everything, just pick, I guess, sort of one main thing you'd like to see different in that team on Monday evening. Luke, what would be the one thing you'd change?
It's got to be the desire and the will to want to win a game, because if these turn up on Monday and then Donker's putting in challenges like he was today, half-hearted 50-50s against them lot. Nah, I still haven't forgiven them for the game at the Molineux. So if the rock up and play like they did today on Monday, the lot of them can go for me. Seriously.
Yep. I mean, considering as of time of recording, Albion are 2-1 with 89 minutes played and are sort of currently, well, joint on points with Fulham as well. So, I mean, it's looking unlikely that they're going to survive, because they're still 7 points off with 5 games to go and a hilariously bad goal difference. But, You know, they've still got things to play for, and we've shown today that we don't have anything to play for. These players did not give a flying sugar.
Richard, come on.
I don't know why I pulled away from the swear
word. Say what you want to say.
I don't know why I pulled away from the swear word, considering how many Luke's thrown out today. Dan, how about you? One thing, would it be either a personnel formation or a sort of Luke on a bit more of a mentality difference?
Tough one, ain't it? I just don't think we've got the personnel. We ain't even got like a Stephen until you can just throw in for the game, fill him full
bit of Maverick.
You know, a 12-pack of Red Bull and let him go. We ain't got nothing like that at the moment, have we? It's on the players now. It's really on the players. I mentioned a few months back, we all know as good a leader as Connor Cody is, in a dressing room of players of elite level, you know, lots of Neves, Matinho, Patricio, does he have the respect of those players when he's G'ing them up as the last voice before they kick off in a game? I don't know. It's on the players now. They have to flippin' show some bollocks next week, otherwise it's going to be another embarrassing game. And I think I'll put it there now. If Albion beat us next week, you can bank on that they'll stay up come the end of the season.
Oh, you've heard it here first, guys and girls. Kim, how about you? Is it very much, again, same as Luke and Dan in terms of we just need to show that... Hold the front door, guys. We'll go to Kim in a second.
I'm on a stream here, Luke. Bloody hell.
Sorry, mate. It's a howler. You're in for a treat here. It's Keenan Davis as well. I think he's absolutely...
Keenan and Kel Davis.
Oh, Keenan. Oh, wonderful. Oh, that's made our evenings ever so slightly better.
We're going to lose to these next week.
Have you seen the goal yet, Dan?
Yeah, it's happened. Sorry, Rich.
Oh my God.
Brian is saying quickly, Rich, because line of duty is starting in a minute.
I was going to say. So, Kim, just to wrap up our Albion chat, what would you like to see change? And we'll do score predictions.
I'm just going to echo what these pair said, really. You just want to see a bit of grit, determination, and just to show that we've got a better team than Albion. But at the end of the day, they'll probably just turn up and want it more again. And I'm not going to let that happen because I just feel like right now I don't even want to watch it. I'm going to put about 50 quid on Albion to win just to trump Stu, I think. And
if you go to the Ball Sports website, I believe you can get them at a relatively good price. But all right, quick score predictions then for West Brom. You know what? I'm going to be positive. I'm going to say 1-0 Wolves. Dan, how about you?
4-2 Albion.
Luke?
2-1 Wolves. You can't fucking... Even if you think they're going to beat us, you can't fucking...
Okay, 0-0. I can't predict us to win. I can't do it. Because I'll jinx them. I can't do it to us. I'd rather just say, Albion going to beat us. And it's, you know, it's just one of them. The bogey team of ours, whim shit at the moment. Just if hopefully, nah, I can't say.
All right, Kim, how about you?
Right, if I'm looking at this as a neutral, I would go 2-0 Albion right now. I just don't see that we're going to score. I can't see where we're going to score. How we're going to score?
They'll get relegated, but they'll do the double over us, and they'll dine out on it for
10 years
to come. Because they won't come back up either, which will be even more frustrating. Then we'll draw them in about 4 years' time in the second round of the Carabao Cup, and they'll dump us out on after extra time.
The nice. First round of the flipping Papa John's Cup, we're in Bath in League One.
Right, shall we end the show with some lighthearted questions from Twitter Corner?
Go on then.
Yes, I was going to say, it's like you have any choice because I'm going to go through it anyway. Right, so thanks for everyone who sent in your questions. We tried to ask for some little boring name ones because otherwise I think we'll go insane. So first one up from Dean Marston, friend of the show. He said, this one's directed to Stu, so we're going to slightly change it. So he said, how many coronas is too many? That's to Stu. So earlier in the week, Stu actually claimed he once had 25 pints in one day. That's about a 17-hour shift of drinking. Quick round the room. What's the most you've ever drinking in one session, either over a day or however you want to look at it? Because I'm going to go for about 10. That's sort of about where I managed to do it at university before being very sick the next day.
I'd struggle to quantify it. All I'd say is, if you don't need to have a sit-down shower the next day, you ain't drunk hard enough.
Good answer, Dan. I like it a lot.
See, I've never quite understood how people can say with confidence how much they've drunk the night before. Because I think you get to 6 or 7, then you just forget anyway.
Why would you count?
I don't know.
You bank the next day. It's obvious then, isn't it?
Ah.
Yeah, but what if you're paying cash? What if you're paying cash?
Well, who does that these days?
True.
Mine's probably about 12 to 15 drinks. But then I obviously, not pints, obviously, like gins, cocktails, whatever. And then be really sick the next day and have bruises down my arm, like last week.
Do you remember how you got the bruises? Or is it just one of those where it's like, well, they've appeared?
Just falling around in the bathroom when I got back and not lying on the bathroom floor.
I think the marker is, if you're not going on the Fancast Instagram Live, pissed out your face, you've not drunk enough.
I was about to say a follow-up to that, but I won't. Touching on one from Stu Hall, when you have chicken soup, and I don't know if this can just apply for soup in general, do you dip the bread in like a sauce, or do you break it into pieces and put it in the bowl and use your spoon to get it out?
You dip?
Yeah, I'm a dipper.
Yeah, dip.
We're more dippers in here. Okay, Matt Guy asks, seeing as the players were already on the beach today, what's your favourite beach?
The Beach Boys.
Fair.
No, good vibrations in here at the moment.
Benidorm Beach, you can't beat it.
Alex Moore, I will ask questions that aren't ones with including former Fancastians, but Alex Moore asks your favourite 90s or noughties boy band.
NSYNC. Banger after banger.
Yeah, I was edging towards NSYNC, but I think I'm going to go with Blue.
Which out.
Take back, yeah, they'd count, yeah.
Go on then, Rich, tell us yours.
See, I've been umming and ahhing this for the last sort of hour and a half. I've still not come to a conclusion. I'm thinking Boyzone or Westlife.
Oh, nah. Nah, too soft. Too soppy.
Yeah, but you know me, Luke. Is it not just on brand at this point? All five, because I saw Abs doing a solo tour and he came to Aberystwyth. That was in 2011. So that...
Would Busted fall under a noughties boy band?
Oh, see, I think they're more of a, yeah. I kind of fly
or Busted if that's the case, but at least they've got instruments. That means they're not a boy band.
Yeah.
I know, but when they're singing songs with...
Well, is that a group?
That's McFly. That's McFly. Yeah, okay, again, I don't think you can if you can't have Busted, you can't have McFly, in my opinion, in this.
I'm sticking with Blue.
I was going to say, who'd you prefer out of McFly and Busted, real quick?
Busted.
McFly.
I think I'd go McFly as well. That'd be a great one. Right, let's end the show on that, because otherwise we're going to get really, we're going to go really off wind. But join us next time for the Fancast podcast, where we will be reviewing all your 90s and noughties boy bands. We will be back actually and properly later in the week to our Fancast pre-match, where we'll be covering the preview against Arsenal, where Dan the Man will be bringing you that show on YouTube and also out as a podcast. Big thanks to our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media, for your marketing website needs. Go check them out at pixelyetimedia.com. Keep your eyes out for some big news coming out from the Fancast in the coming days. It should be sort of really fun and interesting, and mean, well, quite a lot for us. and hopefully we can pass on some of the benefits to you guys over the coming weeks and months as well. But stay tuned for that. Keep up to date with all of our socials. We're now officially at Wolves Fancast on all of our social medias, which is lovely, fun and consistent, and means I don't have to rattle off three or four different ones. So thanks very much for joining us today. Sorry if it was a bit negative, but that performance was shit. On that lovely note, it's goodbye from Luke.
See you later.
It's goodbye from Dan.
We are getting relegated.
It's goodbye from Kim.
Ta-ra.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next time.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a new season we recommend.
I'm Sam Bungie, one of the hosts of West Cork, a story about a community on the far south coast of Ireland that became a kind of paradise for people looking for a fresh start.
And nobody knew their past. You could be who you wanted to be, rather than who you really were.
Then one newcomer was murdered and another was suspected of doing it.
I see him in the market, and really, he's always trying to be normal and trying to get people to like him. But we all know, don't we?
Listen to West Cork now on Acast.
Acast recommends.